Hello and welcome to the Wholehearted Healer Podcast. My name is Dr. Aveen Banish and I will be your host. This is the weekly podcast that helps women pause in their busy lives, drop into the heart, and remember their next right step. I am so happy that you're here. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Wholehearted Healer Podcast. You are in for a real treat today. I have a dear friend and an amazing soul on, Tara Rabear. And Tara, I met a number of years ago after moving to Colorado Springs, and I just found her to be a breath of fresh air in her realness, in her presence. Tara is a licensed professional counselor. She has a master's in counseling from Denver Seminary. She has done so many different trainings. She's EMDR trained. She's participated in courses through the Animas Valley Institute and the Action of Contemplation School. And I just wanted to read here a short excerpt from her beautiful website, because I think it's a really beautiful place to start. And she wrote this: "My body has been my greatest teacher, the one who has slowly awoken my sleepy unconscious into greater conscious wholeness. I am one who found herself with chronic health pain and issues at 24. Within a 10-year period of wrestling with bulimia nervosa, with chronic excruciating menstrual pain. Over the last decade, I have invested and devoted myself to becoming whole. These bodily sufferings led me to talk therapy, cranial sacral therapy, network spinal analysis, Rolfing, psychedelic assisted therapy, earth-based ceremony, energy healing, holistic nutritional support, contemplation practice through the Christian mystic path, as well as Buddhist psychology." And so Tara is a wise soul who has really been on a journey, and through her own journeying, she is assisting others with a wide variety of therapeutic approaches to become more whole and I think alleviate suffering, including working with people on psychedelic integration. And so Tara, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you, Aveen.
It's just good to be in your presence. We haven't seen each other in person for quite a while. You have been on journeys and training. And so I suppose, you know, where to begin, we are all universes unto ourselves. And so it's kind of to dive in, I guess, how did you find your way to being a counselor, someone who helps others?
It's a funny question. So my undergrad is in philosophy, because I've always just loved exploring all the different perspectives of religion specifically. When I was 16, I really started to consider myself like a heretic in a way, and didn't agree with a lot of the tenets of evangelicalism that I was taught. And so I went into philosophy to just learn, like, what are all these other ideas in the world out there? And after I graduated, I needed to find a career that I could support myself in financially. And so getting my PhD in philosophy seemed like a little bit too much of a like a wobbly path in that. And so I chose counseling secondarily to really wanting to go into more of the academic world, and fell in love with psychology and counseling. So it's an interesting way how I got here. I really didn't expect to be here when I was in my mid-20s. Yeah.
Beautiful. And in knowing you and in knowing your journey, it's been this beautiful thing to observe in that I feel like the longer I know you, the more embodied you become. And so can you, for people who are aware of psychology and some of the things that you've trained in, can you talk about embodiment and how that journey for you has been an important one?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it actually starts in some ways with you, like being in the community of network spinal analysis, which I think I was like 27 when I entered into that. And I just started to feel my body for the first time, really, in some of those sessions on the table with Tad and our fellow chiropractor at one point. And yeah, once that happened, I started to just dive like so deeply into meditation and wanting to feel myself more and get out of my intellect and my obsessive thinking and really start to ground into my experience. And one day I had a meditation, which actually was with Joe Dispenza at the time. I used to meditate with him a lot. I had this like full body, what I now see as a Kundalini awakening, and just found myself experiencing so much pleasure and bliss and feelings I didn't know were possible until that moment. And yeah, and then ever since then, it's just been a deepening, like spiraling and deepening into my body through a lot of different means, which I would say now it comes more from my relationship with other beings, with trees, with sage, with bushes, with flowers, with like feeling into my own body, but feeling into my own body in relationship with other living beings.
That's really beautiful.
Yeah.
What do you say to someone listening who, like, we lost them with that, like someone who maybe has not yet, who is really in their head, because we live in a society that really acknowledges us for our mental capacities, right? That's how we school children. And so someone who may vaguely know what you're talking about, but they're not yet embodied. Right? They're still in their head and they're thinking, well, how can I get embodied? And they're overthinking, how can I get embodied? So how would you even say to begin that journey?
Yeah. You know, it wasn't my path. This isn't how I first came into my body, but what comes now in to my heart is just the simplicity of like letting yourself feel raindrops touch your head and letting yourself smell the fragrance of flowers and like letting your body hug a tree and like run your hands up and down the bark. It's so simple, but and actually from a trauma-informed perspective, it's like those very simple extraceptive ways of connecting to our felt sense are in some ways the easiest ways to start to connect. Sometimes connecting inside our own body can feel really scary, I think, for a lot of people. Yeah.
Yeah, so just slowing down and connecting with the world around us in very simple ways. That it doesn't have to be complicated or a 12-step process. It can just be in this moment, what am I feeling? What am I connecting with?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Tara, when you talk about this difference between kind of dropping into the body and that now your practice really is in being in relation to this larger world. Can you just discuss that a little bit?
Yeah. I think I've felt a lot of my life really isolated and lonely. And from a feeling sense, it's like there's nothing really happening out there except for this. It's almost like how I used to see was like everything was in 2D, mm-hmm. and I was kind of in here and everything out there was just like a screen almost. And the deeper I've come into my spiritual practice of being in connection with my true self and voice and this earth, I've found myself on, some would say, yeah, the sacred feminine path or the divine feminine path, which is so deeply interwoven with relationship and seeing everything as living and alive. And when I'm with myself outside and I can really slow down enough, I can just feel how the river wants to speak and she has something to say to me, and I can be in this dance with her and say something back. And it sounds really magical in a way to like our modern minds, or mythical, or fake, or primitive or something, but it's what really is here. And it's so beautiful to live that way. Like, it's so much more enlivening than kind of feeling like everything outside of me is an object, which I feel like a lot of us are trained from very early on to see everything outside of us, even other humans, as objects, mm-hmm. not subjects. Yeah.
And I'm curious, with this journey that you've been on, you know, you write so beautifully on your website about the challenges that you faced in your early 20s and chronic pain in the body. And how has that shifted since you have started to change your own perspective, I guess?
Yeah. It's changed so much. And actually, my therapist and mentor, Bruce Sanguin, who's the most beautiful human, I love him so much. He supported me seeing this over time, but how even bulimia for me, which was a really deep, dark struggle, was actually even in itself like a way my body was trying to wake myself up into consciousness and to rid myself of that objectification that I was taught on a lot of different domains, one of them being food, culture. There's a lot else there, but yeah, as I've deepened into my body, as I've deepened into relationship with other beings, I don't need to like binge a shit ton of food and throw it up because I'm not miserable anymore, because I'm actually like in coherence and in line with what my true nature is actually meant to be doing as a human being, which is to be in reciprocal relationship with the world around me. I feel like I feel healthy, I feel whole. And even my moon cycle, that's been a more recent healing. Like I've still struggled with really painful menstrual cycles. But over the last year, with a few girlfriends that really work in that field, I finally, even now, I could say honestly that like my favorite day of the month is the first day of my bleed. And
can you speak more about that? Why that is?
Yeah, I feel so in having experienced a lot of alternate states of consciousness through a lot of different modalities, meditation or entheogens or yoga, centering prayer. Without any of that, the first day of my moon cycle brings me into, naturally, without any structure, an entirely other state of consciousness where I feel deeply connected to source and deeply connected to my own true voice, who I really am, and the love and the power that lives inside of me. And yeah, and I can just feel this discernment about my life, where I need to go, what I need to do, that I can't get in any other day of the month. It's that first like 8-12 hours, I'm just like, whoa, truth.
I love that, because in our culture, right, that's, I mean, women especially are like caricatured on that day, right? I mean, it's like, we become like a cartoon, I feel like, in how we're described and how society looks at us, and the hassle that we are, you know, quote unquote, thought of as. So that's a really interesting and powerful way to reframe that.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. There's been such a programming and conditioning around our female bodies, and specifically that is so not true. It's just so not how we're really meant to feel or be with ourselves and our blood cycles and this really deep wisdom that we each carry in a very specific way that the male body can't. Although of course there's like androgyny and we can all access the yin and the yang within us. Like there's something about our blood that is really sacred, and it's so sad that we've been conditioned as a culture to not honor and revere that part of us. Yeah. Yeah.
And let's pray that that's changing.
Yeah. I feel like it is. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You referenced, is it entheogens, or how do you, that word?
Entheogens. Yeah. Entheogens.
Can you talk a little bit about that and that therapy?
Yeah. Yeah. So I started working 4 years ago with a guide, an entheogen guide, psychedelic medicine guide. Actually, he works with MDMA, which is not an entheogen. Entheogen are plant-based ceremonial medicines, and mushrooms. And it changed. Yeah, it changed my life. Like, I think one of the things I remember saying after I first did MDMA was, I have been a bird in a cage my entire life, and I didn't even know it. Yeah. And I had done so much work up to that point, like with network and psychotherapy and meditation, but it was that first journey with MDMA where I finally was like, wow, I've been caged. And then since then, I've really deepened into learning about these medicines through School of Consciousness Medicine, which actually last year, and I had left 6 months before this, but there's a cover story in the New York Times about a lot of the abuse that went on in School of Consciousness Medicine with Francois Bourzet and Aharon Grossbard. And they're beautiful people, but like this huge psychedelic renaissance, there's a lot of loopholes. Mm-hmm. And I would say a lot of them are in part because we live in this like capitalistic patriarchal society that those wounds infiltrate almost every sphere of our society, including really deeply spiritual spheres.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I learned a lot even through that experience of like, what does it mean to be a part of a spiritual container with entheogens, with people who, they were really renowned. They were like 45 years of underground psychedelic work and, a huge populace of people who work and learned from them. And it came crumbling. And in my own experience of being abused in certain ways, like I had to work through that. And I learned so much from it, and I'm still learning, but how to use these medicines in a really responsible way and what kind of people I want to sit for me or hold space for me in that. Mm-hmm. And across the board, there's so many podcasts and conversations about the ways entheogens have been so profoundly changing for people, and also some of these shadow sides that have come out too.
Well, that seems like a theme, not just in many power structures, not just spiritual or religious, but political, and that a lot of, you know, that imbalance of power is righting itself in a lot of ways now.
Yes.
Not without some significant trauma, I'm sure. But can you just talk about, you know, because I think entheogens are entering mainstream consciousness again. You know, Michael Pollan has done really good work. And now there's a Netflix special about it. So I, you know when there's a Netflix special that it's becoming kind of common. So I think there's a lot of people who are interested in the therapeutic benefits, also probably maybe a little scared, right? Because so much has been written in on both sides that it can be life-changing, but that it can really, for some people, be terrifying too. And so can you speak to just your own personal experience, how working with those, I don't know what you would even call them, conscious medications, plant medicines, assisted you on your own journey?
I feel like one aspect of entheogens that has been deeply assistive for me is it's kind of coming back to the body piece and embodiment, is they created enough space for my normal sensory gate channels of the world to be shifted and for me to really open to the animate earth and to God and to spirit and to memory too. Like once I started working with those medicines, just so many memories that I had forgotten of childhood and my biographical narrative as well as past life memory started to be more easily accessed. Yeah. So that's one aspect I feel like is they just, that part of us, that part of me that was conditioned to think through everything was just, it's just like came down, just completely fell. So.
And in a really responsible, ethical setting, can you see these, plant medicines being of use for the world right now?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yes. Yeah, they're so supportive. Yeah, I mean, even just psilocybin mushrooms, like they come from the earth. Mushrooms in general are so supportive to us on a lot of different levels and for different reasons depending on what mushroom it is, but yeah, psilocybin is such an invitation to the sacred feminine if it's held within a responsible container. And I believe that what the world really needs right now is for that feminine wing of consciousness to come back, because right now we're so in this wounded masculine, and I feel entheogens can really bring back feeling, like just how to feel again.
I love that. And so can you, I think I know what you're talking about with that, but someone listening who, again, they're like, I love what she's saying. It sounds so beautiful, but I don't understand.
Yeah.
When you say like bringing back the feminine, the divine feminine, what does that look like? Where is she lacking in the world, and how would bringing her back balance us?
Yeah. I'm trying to feel into what's some like a simple example. I'll speak to this because I mean, I would say one of my expertise actually is like childhood trauma. I just really get, and this is why Bruce Sangwin is my mentor, because this is the lineage he comes from. It's a very feminine way of being with people in therapy. It's not as much like tool or modality based. It's really about love and presence and relationship. And so, yeah, I feel like when a child comes to a parent and is like, "Mom, I'm like," or "Dad, I'm like so happy. Like, please look at my piece of art. Like, I just made this art and it's so beautiful." I think like within our really busy and overly capitalistic kind of wounded masculine society, oftentimes a parent would respond to that child with like looking really quickly, just like, "Oh, that's really cool. Okay, but I'm doing this," and just keep doing that. Whereas a feminine, like someone who's deeply in their feminine, would respond very slowly, would like put, you know, the computer or the book down, get down on the child's level, look in their eyes and say like, "Hey, I'm so excited to like see you so excited. And will you show me this? Like, what's this about?" And then after a few moments of like really connecting with the eyes of the child and like revealing that you as a parent are very present, then, you know, maybe say, "Hey, and I got to do this work, but I'm just so glad that you were here with me for a moment." So that is like a simple, practical example, I feel, of feminine energy.
That's really beautiful. And I think, you know, I'm a mom, I have four kids, they're older now, but, I can completely relate to that, right? Because we live in this world where multitasking is really, lauded, and we're kind of applauded for doing 25 things at once and how much can we get done in a day, where I think there is this deep longing amongst not just women, but humans to be able to slow down and connect and probably get off screens. And, but there's this kind of not knowing how. It's like we've lost the thread a little bit.
Yeah.
And we've set up our society in such a way that getting back to that, a simple interaction like that feels a bit revolutionary. Yeah. And that makes my heart kind of sad, to be honest, because I've definitely been that mother that's looked at a masterpiece and half looked at the masterpiece while I'm doing 10 other things.
Yeah. Because we've created a society that's run on that vastness and needing to pay the bills. And that's run on a food system where we're not actually connected to the food sources close to us. And just the whole industrial way of being has, which is so complex, but it's perpetuated these like small moments of not being able to attune and like the most important things of like why we're really here, which is love and connection. Yeah.
And so there's always a point in these interviews when I'm talking to really beautiful souls where I come to this moment and it's like, well, do we have to blow it all up? Like, how do we remain, and how do we change?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it feels like there's a lot of conversation now about collapse. Like, I hear so many people talking about that, and that being some sort of necessary undertaking, if there is to be, as Joanna Macy calls it, a great turning where humanity comes back into life enhancing relationship with the earth, with each other as earth, because we are earth too. I know from my own personal life, and I guess that's where I can speak to more directly, I've had to burn a lot and I've had to collapse a lot and I've had to die a lot to be where I'm at now. And so I imagine if, you know, the personal is a mirror to the meta and the non-personal, that there is some big death process before us on a, yeah, on a bigger systemic scale. And we live in the in-between. We live in that liminal space right now. Like, I think a lot of us on this path, like, want the world to be a more beautiful place for the next generations. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, like, you know, I still have to get my food sometimes from like an industrial plant. Like, I still am part of that system that is using semi truck drivers and just, yeah, the complexity of it. And then, yeah, at the same time, it's like, I try to get my meat and my raw milk from like a local farm, and I'm trying to support local ways of that are more conscious in the way that they treat other beings. So it's this like liminal, and like, I still have to pay the bills. So I have to like work a lot sometimes, but then I also try to make my life less expensive, so I have more time to like be with Chris and Pan. And I think a lot of people in the West could just like cut down so much on how much they buy and have so much more time. And it's that like timelessness that I think we all crave. Just like, I don't have to be anywhere or do anything. I can just be here with you. That's really rare.
And I love that response, because it acknowledges that just, I think being human is messy, right? And these, right, even these ideas that we hold about what to eat, and I'm a vegan, or I'm a, you know, I, all the different ways that we can claim that we eat food, or our religious or political beliefs, that it's in the in-between, and that a lot of it probably is going to have to fall away to some degree. But what I like to point out too, is that if you've been through a lot of deaths, Tara, like, you seem happier, more centered, more present, certainly than when I met you 5 years ago. And yes, I know it hasn't been an easy 5 years. And so sometimes we spend so much energy fearing change and fearing what has to fall away. And then when it falls away, it's actually kind of wonderful.
Yes. Yes. Well, yes, that's like, I mean, that's the real tragedy of losing touch with the cycles of Earth and like goddess culture, the feminine, is that we've, as a culture, become really scared of death. And our relationship with death is really weird. We like hide it. We don't really acknowledge it. We don't have grief ceremonies around people. It's just like very kind of disassociative relationship with death. Whereas any like nature-based culture has a very sacred relationship with death, seeing that all death is a step toward rebirth and life. And then there's death, and then there's life, and then there's death, and there's life. And this has been happening for millennia. So yeah, every time that I've died, or I've even done like death lodge ceremonies, I have come through so much more alive on the other side. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's something to hold on to right now, because I think in so many, you know, I think it used to be, even like 20 years ago, it was the areas that were kind of in crisis for many of us. If you were, I suppose, entitled enough to be able to look away, you could look away, right? But now the sense is that it's harder to look away, because it's everywhere. And so, again, as you kind of mentioned, the personal versus like micro versus macro, as below, so above, it's, I think we're feeling it more in our cellular structure than maybe we did in the past. And so there's a reckoning at hand on some level.
Yeah. 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 It's so true. Yeah. I feel that.
What I think is so beautiful about the work you're doing with other people is that this reminder that, that together, right, relationally, nothing is so scary. And especially when we're in relation to the earth, as a conscious being,
Yes. Yes.
Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't have walked through fire ceremony and death ceremonies without the support of a lot of soul friends and mentors who've walked that path many times before me. And yeah, and I'm so grateful for the places and the spaces where I have community and people to like radically support me. And also that you know, that's a lack in our society too. And we're doing the best that we can. But yeah, I know for my own heart, like, and I really experienced this when I was in Kauai, which was recently, and it's such a motherland.
Oh, it is. Yes.
It's like primordial dragon waters, like feels like the old earth and the new earth. And you've been there too.
Yeah. It's such a mother place.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And it was just a feeling like near the ocean of like, yeah, I don't know what's going to happen to humanity, but I know that my greatest mother is this mother of the waters, of this deep primordial essence. And I am held, and I can stand tall in these times, even when so much pain is all around me. Not only with humans, but all these other beings that were causing so much destruction toward as we continue to cut down the rainforest and build and develop and very unconsciously. There's so much pain right now. And like, I can feel in my own bones, like I'm so held by this force, this being that is going to be here, that has been here longer than humans have been here, that will be here if we're here in the future or not. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yesterday, my family and I went to Hanging Lake near Glenwood.
Oh, so pretty.
Which is this beautiful sort of ancient lake in the middle. You have to walk up like a little over a mile, rocky, super rocky trail to get there. And then you arrive at this, it's like a Shangri-La, you know, it's this beautiful clean water ecosystem with water that's coming out of something they called spouting rock. And scientists aren't like, they've tried to trace the source of the water, and there's some creek like 5 miles away, but it's a bit of a mystery. And last year there was a raging fire in Grizzly Creek Canyon near there. And it was stunning to see because, you know, the fire came very close to this very sacred water, and it didn't take the lake. But again, there's something very, it felt like there was an aliveness there at a clean water source. You know, I think when you're in Kauai, you're really aware of that as well. And it was reassuring because, you know, even though there was a fire that almost took it, this pristine, beautiful little ecosystem knows how to manage itself and is not going to be burned, at least this time. I don't know. It was a really nourishing visit.
Oh, I love that. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a taste of that pure beauty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It goes a long way. I feel like in healing, and it was interesting because one of my youngest noticed, he's like, Mom, everyone here is grinning. Like you get there and it's a different, right? It's like a remembering, like people were so friendly to one another and making eye contact. And normally on a trail that doesn't happen all the time.
Right.
And so it was really, I mean, my 13-year-old noticed, he's like, people are really happy here. And so, yeah, that connection with, that's a natural joy, right? And I think that's what I sense in you, is that the more you connect with the earth around you and the plants and people and animals, the happier it seems like, maybe happy is not the right word. Contentedness is what I see.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say happy is not.
Right. Happy seems not the right word, but perhaps contented.
Yes. Yeah. And I'll name, like, to be fully honest, it's like, there's really deep grief here that I carry.
Yes.
Like really full on, like it's devastating, like really feeling into what humanity has partaken in the last thousands of years, how we've treated this, you know, how we've treated our mother, how we've treated each other, how we've treated the feminine. It's really fucking hard to reckon with sometimes. And it's like only through feeling that grief and being real with it can I feel alive.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, that's what it is. I just feel really alive now, even when it's really painful. Yeah, I feel here. And there's so much bliss too, even in it. But
yeah.
It's both. It's that, you know, like Rilke says, I think it's like, let the beauty and the terror happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
And almost any great poet is always going to be speaking to like that paradox of true living is really dark and also so light. It's both.
Yeah. And so maybe not so much contented as you have the capacity now to not turn away. Like I think that capacity to just witness is what so many people are being called to. And it's really beautiful and it's really hard.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And we need each other.
Yes. We can't do it alone. Yeah. We need to be in community to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there are days where it's going to be too hard for me. And then
exactly.
You'll be able, you know, so yes. Yeah, so, and we're not meant to do it alone.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. So what about someone listening who is suffering and is feeling a lot of the things that we've talked about, but has never been in therapy, has never taken, you know, or tried psilocybin, you know, that seems like the far end of the spectrum. And they're curious, but they're like, no way. Where would you suggest that they begin?
Yeah, you know, if I listen to my heart again, like I've already said it, but just I say begin with just building a relationship with the beings around you. So wherever you live, paying attention and building a relationship with the ponderosa near you or the crows that come cawing every morning or the ants that like make their way into your house during the summer, start there. Yeah. Start there. And then I'll say, like, as far as human relationship goes, it's like, I personally have benefited so much from like good psychotherapy, like really good quality. Well, there's a lot of therapists out there that are not, they're doing the best they can, but they haven't really done their own inner work and they're operating more out of this like helper fix it mode. And so to be kind of wary of that and really look and tune into someone who feels like they're actually an adult and they have, they've worked through their own childhood trauma specifically, because most of us in the West have a lot of childhood lack of mirroring and attunement, and it impacts our human relationships in these really devastating ways. So to pursue like really good psychotherapy, I feel like is so beneficial for and needed for like all of us, because even like with School of Consciousness Medicine, from my perspective, that's what it lacked. It's like it was this deep spiritual container, a lot of vertical spirituality. And we have a lot of that, but what we don't have is a lot of this like nitty gritty like fine tuning relational awareness of like just how to be safe. And as my mentor says, relax in the presence of another person. And a lot of that started so early. So yeah, relationship, I'd say go to relationship with the wild ones around you and or to like a really good psychotherapist. Yeah.
I think that is super solid advice. It's very interesting to note too, that that's the second time on this podcast that that advice, Sophie Strand, mm-hmm. who is a really wonderful poet, and I feel like a soul sister of yours, Tara, gave that advice too, to take the time to name the beings that are near you almost in litany every morning. Like that's her practice, right? And just doing that, or just like you said, welcoming the natural beings around you immediately brings you into relationship with them.
Yeah, totally.
And yes. Then the great advice to yes, if therapy is calling to you, find a really good therapist and begin your own journey. That, right? Like that stigma no longer holds.
Right.
Right. Which is so
yeah. Good. We all need therapy. Sorry, but yes. Coming from what we come from, we all need like some good therapy. I
think that is super great advice and a wonderful place to end this. I'm going to link your, I'm just curious, Tara, are you taking clients at the moment or are you full up in your practice?
I am working a little bit less right now just through December because I'm in a year-long soul initiation program with the Animus Valley Institute, but I do have like a couple slots. Okay.
Yeah. Open. So anyone listening who really resonates with you, I'll just connect them. You know, they can seek you out. And I want to thank you so much for your time. I want to thank you for the challenging work that you're doing to remember wholeness. And in doing that, I think your capacity to hold space and be a really wonderful source for other people like exponentially increases. And so thank you for the work you're doing in the world and for your friendship to me.
Thank you, Avian. I so resonate. Thank you for being you and for bringing me on here. I feel really honored. Yeah. And loved.
Thank you so much.
It's so good to see you.